welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are... This is Eric.
And by the way, you know, when you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex. Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is true.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen. And not a one of you is prepared for it.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road and, you know, anyway. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
This is Drew.
And tonight we're going to talk about the 1999 comedy Office Space, written and directed by Mike Judge. Brother Jay, is this on your list?
It's not on my list, but it's a movie I own.
Apparently it's not on Drew's list either, but it's a movie he likes.
Yeah, I don't remember who put it on the calendar.
I'm sure it's on my... I'm sure it's in my notes somewhere, but it's not really on my list either. Anybody want to drive? I got the plot, but anybody want to claim it? Or are we just going to start with Brother Jay and go from there?
I'll claim it. I don't recall doing so, but that doesn't mean I didn't. I saw this movie when it came out in the theaters and thought it was hilarious and bought it on... I have it on DVD, not Blu-ray, but DVD. So I've had it for some time, and it's still as hilarious to me today as it was the day that I saw it in the movie theater. Part of it is that there are people in this movie that are people that I used to work with, personality-wise.
Oh, that's 2 weeks in a row then.
Planet of the Apes?
What? No. 2 weeks. Drew's movie last week was all about people he worked with.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So it's a theme.
It's like I don't remember Milo or Caesar or Lisa. At any rate. So boyfriend Jesse, I had not seen this movie before, and he thought this was as funny as he thought Rat Race wasn't.
Okay, so...
Yes!
So just to back up slightly, so he watched Rat Race. Right. He watched Rat Race and did not like it.
He didn't hate it, but he didn't really laugh. And I laughed like a silly bastard repeatedly. Even though I've seen the movie I don't know how many times, I still laughed like a stupid child.
He didn't think the Barbie Museum was funny?
No.
He didn't think the Lucy bus was funny?
No.
He didn't even enjoy the It's a Race.
No.
Did he at least chuckle at the Up in Heaven?
Did you watch the extras with Vince Villeneuve?
I did, but he pulled the ripcord.
Wow.
Yeah. So what can I say?
That's unfortunate. That actually is the best part.
Yeah. I think he really pulled the ripcord. When I said, he said, this movie's kind of bad. And I said, well, if you think so, it's about to get worse. Because what 90 early 2000s pop band would really make you not like this movie?
Oh, come on.
And he didn't even hesitate. He goes, oh, my God, is Smash Mouth in this?
I think people are too hard on Smash Mouth.
I don't think so.
You know, they're doing an acoustic tour, right?
Is Sugar Ray going to join them?
Sugar Ray probably could. Yeah. I think Mark McGrath and the guy from Smash Mouth and Guy Fieri can all go on a road trip together.
I've seen both of those bands in concert. I think Smash Mouth's first album is good.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. I don't think they're awful. I never really liked them, but...
They're just pop music. That's what Sugar Ray turned into, right?
Yeah, similarly, I think Sugar Ray's first album is really good.
But not similarly in the fact that Sugar Ray's first album wasn't the popular one.
No, it is quite different.
Much like Radiohead's first album had airplay and none of the rest of them really did.
Yeah, they went the other way.
Exactly, yeah. They didn't like the first album. And they were historically, I think, wrong.
I disagree. I love Radiohead's older stuff. Later stuff. Yeah, I don't like the first album at all.
No, first album is great. First album is exactly what the public needed, which is why they didn't like it, because they're pretentious jackasses.
I hate that CD. I hate the CD that I had that Drew stole.
It's just fine. Anyway, so this isn't about music, though. This is about comedy movies like Office Space. Now, comedy
is... It's a race, I'm winning.
Well, okay, we talked about this before, but comedies are a little hard to talk about.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, so Drew, what's your recollection of this movie?
I saw this movie when it first came out, so that was before I had ever worked in an office, and I liked it, and it only got better once I entered the workforce for real. I have worked in Cubicle City, and a lot of this resonates with me.
Cube Farm.
Yeah, I think it's funny. I think it holds up. It's certainly, just from like a technology standpoint, it's dated. But other than that, I think the jokes hold up. I enjoyed watching it again. I don't have any greater insight than I did, 10 years ago, 15 years ago. What is this movie 20 years old now?
Next year.
It's getting there, yeah, next year.
Well, that makes me feel old. But yeah, I enjoy it. This is probably the best thing that is the lead's name Ron Livingston.
Yes,
it's the best thing he's ever done.
Well, he was in Band of Brothers and The Conjuring.
Sure.
Yeah. So you're right. This is the best thing he's done.
Yeah.
Although, okay, so I saw this movie not in the theaters but on video, and it was fine, and I thought the jokes were funny, but like a lot of comedies, well, actually, let me back up a little bit. Watching it,
can I ask a question?
Yeah,
interrupt and ask a question. Where were you working when you saw this? Were you still at the hotel, or had you moved? You'd moved to the police department by then.
Yeah, no, I was on my current job.
But you don't really, you're not in a cube farm.
There's no cubes.
I'm not trying to take away from your experiences, but I think if you've worked in an office full of cube farm people, you get a little different perspective. Not better or worse, but a little different.
Oh, I'm not saying I didn't enjoy it. In fact, I think I have a complicated, overly complicated response to watching this movie this time, because I loved a lot of the little acting in this movie. I didn't like the main character, though. I found him to be a Christmas Vacation Clark Griswold unlikable guy.
He's not likable.
No. And that takes a little bit away from it for me. But
he's almost Matt Damon-esque.
He's just... his character isn't likable. I mean, yeah, he's got a punchable face, but if his character had any redeeming qualities throughout the movie in any way... I mean, he's not redeemable even toward... at the end, he's not redeemed. So... he's the main character, but he's not, I mean, first of all,
he's not a protagonist.
Yeah, this is a weird movie. This is a movie that Mike Judge didn't necessarily want to make.
Well, it's based on a short skit about Milton.
Yeah, have you seen, I watched the videos today, the ones that were, I guess, on SNL and Mad TV or something. Like little 2-minute interstitial cartoons. All about Milton. And I think they did the right thing by making Milton sort of a minor character. I mean, he's a major character, but he doesn't have a lot of screen time.
It would have made the movie a lot more tedious had they tried to put him front and center.
Exactly.
And they still used Milton as like an interstitial in this movie.
Yes, he did. Yes. And Stephen Root is a goddamn treasure. He was fantastic. In fact, he does a better Milton than Mike Judge did. Because Mike Judge did the voices of his own animation. And, mm-hmm. Oh no, Stephen Root does so much better. It's just great. He is great. He is the star of the movie. And there are lots of other people I like in this movie. But, yeah, I thought that was a little off-putting. The jokes were solid, though. I mean, and it's workplace humor and still fun. I just, there's a plot issue. And Mike Judge said later that he couldn't figure it out until he was done with the last edit. But turns out he hates the third act of this movie. He said in interviews that, oh, he finally figured out how to fix the third act, but it was after he was already done. But he,
did he say how he would have fixed it?
No, he didn't. Not in anything that I read. I was trying to look for that, but I didn't. And this movie did not make money at the box office. Like, this movie was all about Something About Mary. That was a big hit. So they wanted to thrust like a, just a goofy, happy comedy. And this is what they pulled out. And it bombed, but it became
it barely made back what its budget was.
But then it became a gigantic video hit, like so much so that even the company that put it out on video didn't realize how much of a hit it was. Like the president or something was interviewed about it, the president of the company. And they said, wow, what about this movie that made a ton of money? He's like, how much did it make? Oh crap! That's really good. So you know that redeems
this movie. It's easy to watch. I mean, it's really light, and it's relatively short.
Yeah.
And it moves. It moves along.
Well, okay. So
and while the technology itself may seem dated, the technological issues aren't.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. Everybody's got the equivalent of a TPS for them. Mm-hmm. Everybody's got the equivalent of the printer. Yes, exactly.
Constantly.
Everybody's had to deal with the Lundberg. I mean, this movie is universal.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so we talk about, we're introduced to the dreary life of Peter Gibbons, played by Ron Livingston, as I said before, from The Conjuring, Banner Brothers, and Boardwalk Empire. And he's a software engineer, cubicle dweller at Initech. And he's got coworkers, Samir, played by Ajay Naidu. I can't pronounce his name right.
It would be Ajay, by the way.
Why is he not famous? He's from Suburbia, where he won, I think, an Independent Spirit Award or something. But
see, I remember him from an episode of The West Wing.
Oh, sure. Oh, these people, these actors here, have worked a lot. We're going to get into there. But yeah, he should be famous. Well, it's funny. Michael Bolton, played by David Herman. David Herman was on Mad TV, and he's been on almost every episode of Futurama and Bob's Burgers.
Okay.
So he does a lot of work. And their neighbor, Lawrence, played by Diedrich Bader. Oh,
I love him.
There were a few Whose Line Is It Anyway cast members in here.
Oh, yeah. Well, Diedrich Bader, I assume his name is Bader because the first name is Diedrich. He's from Veep and BoJack Horseman and The Drew Carey Show. And he was Batman from Batman, The Brave and the Bold.
Wow.
And then, oddly enough, there's Joanna, the waitress from Tchotchkes, which is just a knockoff of TGI Fridays. And that's played by Jennifer Aniston. And I'm an unashamed Jennifer Aniston fan.
I actually thought she did a really good job. I really, granted, she was, as were we all, much younger then. But I really, her performance here, I didn't dislike her.
She's adorable. And yet she's not, they gave her character some integrity.
Yeah, she's a straight man.
Yeah.
And her timing was great, because her main role was to just give funny reactions.
Yeah, and she's great, and she's the conscience.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I'm a big fan. And then we have Bill Lumberg, played by Gary Cole, who is in Veep, Talladega Nights, The West Wing, and The Gift. And what Mike Judge said in an interview I was reading was that the studio hated the fact that everything was understated and like mellow in this movie. And Mike Judge is like, no, that's the only way it works.
That's the whole point.
Yeah.
That's what makes it funny.
Yeah, exactly. And he did a great job. I mean, he's just great.
I love him on Veep. He is hilarious on Veep.
I don't think I've ever seen him on anything that he's not good in.
Yeah, even in The West Wing, even though you hated him and he was a hick, it was good.
And then we have the Peter's girlfriend, his old girlfriend, Anne, played by Alexander Wentworth from In Living Color, It's Complicated and Jerry Maguire. And Milton, played by Stephen Root. And we know Stephen Root from News Radio, but also Nut Country for Old Men, Get Out, and King of the Hill.
And The West Wing.
Oh, yeah. Well, Stephen Root, like I said, he's a treasure. He's so good in this.
He's good in everything. I can't think of anything I've seen him in that he wasn't good.
Justified. I think he was on Justified, and he was great.
Let's see. I'll just roll through the rest of the cast real quick, because we're going to get to something I found fascinating. So, Michael McShane, the guy we love from Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Who dies in the movie.
He dies in a lot of movies. That's what you get to be a fat guy. But he's great.
He looked... When I saw him, I'd forgotten it was him, and I was just struck by how different he looked, how recognizable he still was.
His funky toupee.
Yeah.
Is he still alive?
I believe so.
I think he is, yeah.
Yeah.
John C. McGinley from Scrubs, but also from Stand Against Evil and The Rock.
You forgot Surviving the Game.
For John
C.
McGinley?
His seminal role.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Any movie where you're hunting Ice-T, that should go first in your credits.
Well, he's one of the Bobs. The other Bob is Paul Wilson, who played Paul from Cheers.
Mm-hmm.
And also, it's Gary Shandling's show. We have Mike Judge, the director himself, who plays Stan, who is Joanna's boss at Tchotchke's. And then we've got an Inatech coworker named Tom Smakowski, played by Richard Reel. I believe that's how you say his name.
The inventor of the jump to conclusions map?
Yes. And, you know, you look at Richard Reel and you think, oh, he's familiar. You know why he's familiar?
Why?
He has been in everything. Including voiceover work, he has 375 credits in IMDb. Without voiceover work, he has 290 credits, which makes him number 15 on the list of most credits. Just to put that in perspective, number 9 is John Carradine, number 10 is Mickey Rooney, and number 12 is Eric Roberts.
Oh my God, his post-production stuff, he's got all kinds of stuff.
Oh, he is the hardest working man in
Oh my God, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. He's got 10 things in 2018.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I hope he's a billionaire because he works so much.
By the way, he was also in an episode of The West Wing.
Oh, yeah. No, trust me, he's been in everything. It's amazing. Actually, it's interesting to look at that list of the top screen credits. Because there's a lot of silent movie actors, and I'm trying to think of other categories of people. But then you run into people who, oh, that makes sense. Like Willem Dafoe, I think, is on that list somewhere in the top 30. And Danny Trejo is up there.
No, geez.
Just because, you know, you get extra work because you have a certain type. And yeah, you're there. It's awesome. Anyway. Yeah, so this is all about... this movie, it's funny because like a lot of Mike Judge things, I remember easily that he's Beavis and Butthead.
Idiocracy.
Look. Yeah. Well, Idiocracy. Yes, that's brilliant. But I remember he's Beavis and Butthead because the whole plot of this movie is goofy, but he tells you it's goofy. Like these guys' big plan, because they hate their job and hate the company they work for. Their big plan is to rip off the plot of Superman 3 and steal the portions of pennies that the computers calculate.
Mm-hmm.
Which is awesome because at no point in the movie does anybody think anything other than the fact that it's a ridiculous thing that's ripped off from Superman 3. Which is pretty fun. But then we have Milton, who is just... like he's kind of a dark character. But he's so funny because he's just this little, like, he's not even a beta male. He's
he's like an omega male.
Exactly, yeah. And he's a little bit relatable, but also a little bit scary. And what he mumbles is sort of funny and pathetic, except if you listen to it, it's also so well done and then very dark. And this is where, when you look at the Milton shorts, he's always saying, no, I could have you fired and I'll burn the whole building down. I know people like, I can have you killed. So, and I love the fact that, I mean, I really do love lots of this movie. I love the fact that Swingline didn't make a red stapler, but the prop department did, so it could show up.
They make one now.
Exactly. Exactly. People were asking them for it, so they actually put one out and they make it. And people still send Steven Root red staplers.
That's awesome.
Also, Michael Bolton. Michael Bolton still signs copies of the actual singer, signs copies of Office Space.
Office Space. Of course he does.
At first, he did not like it. At first, he did not appreciate being called a, what was it, no talent ass clown. recently, he's made a Funny or Die video or one of those internet things where they actually cut him into the movie and all the Michael Bolton parts in it. But he refers awesome. To himself as a very talented ass clown.
That's funny. He's grown into a sense of humor.
Yeah. That's good.
Have you seen his Lonely Island video?
No.
Oh, which one?
Captain Jack Sparrow?
Oh, yes. Many, many times. I actually have his autobiography read by him on Audible that I actually found quite enjoyable.
You kind of wonder about those guys like Michael Bolton and John Tesh.
Yeah.
Oh, no. John Tesh is a child molester.
Eric, if you have not seen Captain Jack Sparrow, you should treat yourself.
Okay.
You haven't seen it?
No, not that I'm aware of.
Oh, Lord.
Hurt myself laughing so hard.
Okay.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
How's it going?
Really sorry I'm late. I just got caught up watching the Pirates of the Caribbean marathon. Have you seen those things?
Yeah. Those are great.
Well, I listened to your track, and I loved it. And I wrote you this big, sexy hook I think you're going to really dig.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. Great. You want to just lay it down?
Boys,
let's get to it.
Snapping at the neck when we rolling up. Low-key doors ain't no holding up. Black card at the bar like I gives a fuck.
Make a shitty eye when we walk into the set. Fuck the fellas looking jealous, play the back and get wet. Me down in my waistline, shank in my sock. You either get cut, get stuffed, or get shot.
This is the tale of Captain Jack Sparrow. Pirates so brave on the seven seas.
What?
Groupie show us love. Motherfucking Iceman, I'm the top gunner. Heater on blast, I'm the number one stunner.
Get Sparrow!
Watch your girl, cause I ain't your Mr. Nice Guy. More like the meet you, take you home and fuck you twice, guy. All dressed up with nowhere to run. I know I'll make you feel crazy.
Now back
run.
To the good time.
Just wanna play rough.
Okay, I'm reloaded. This is the tale of Tony Montana. Cuban flame with Miami nuts. From a basin wife, a womb is polluted. This whole town's a pussy. Just waiting to get fucked.
Turns out Michael Bolton is a major cinephile.
Complete me!
Yeah.
You've seen the Sergio thing, but you haven't seen the Captain Jack Sparrow?
Which Sergio thing?
The John
Sergio. John Hamm.
Oh, no, I only saw that because you guys told me to.
Oh, you should go watch all the Lonely Island stuff because it's all hilarious.
Yeah, I haven't seen a lot of it. And I think Michael from work was trying to get me turned on to Lonely Island, but just kind of missed it a little bit.
Yeah, there is some funny, funny shit there.
Yeah. One thing that surprised me about the Captain Jack Sparrow video is not only how funny he is, but he's a really good singer.
Oh, yeah.
Like, even when he's just playing around and he's singing little hooks, you're like, oh, man, he's really good.
I am an unashamed Michael Bolton fan. As much as Eric likes Jennifer Aniston, I like Michael Bolton.
I mean, well, that makes sense.
Yeah. And, you know, the other thing the other thing I like about this is I really am a Jennifer Aniston fan, though. Even more so than Jordana Brewster. The other thing about it is TGI Fridays, because of this movie, they got rid of their flair policy.
That was a real thing?
That was a real thing. Yeah. Obviously, I don't think it was quite as much as, you know, you had to have. Oh, maybe you did. I don't know how serious it was. But the suspenders with all the stuff on it. Oh, yeah, that was a real thing. And I think by 2005, it was over. And one of the producers actually asked, like, a server, like, so why do you guys, didn't you used to have the thing? And he's like, yeah, after Office Space, they get rid of that.
Nice.
Which I think is pretty great. See,
steak on a stick will never be the same.
Let me tell you. And also, I guess, because Mike Judge had one of these jobs, he was saying that, you know, they have all these office parks where you have all these basically cube farms. And in the middle, usually there's, I think in his particular one, there was the three restaurants that were kind of mimicked. One of them was Chili's. It was interesting that they used Chili's and they used tchotchkes as TGI Fridays. And then like Flamingos or something, that was some sort of like gator restaurant or something.
Flingers,
yeah.
I thought it was.
So that whole Bennigan's, what do they call it? Shenanigans in one of the, I can't remember what TV show that they did that, but anyway, yeah. So
no, we had a restaurant Shenanigans here in Portland, but it was like a upper crusty steakhouse kind of restaurant on the waterfront.
Not a vegan strip club.
No. No. The strip club down the street from my house, the DV8 Lounge, advertises gluten-free lap dances.
Excellent. The thing with comedies, we don't have a lot to talk about usually because the plots are sort of silly and the whole idea is the experience of it. Much like Rat Race, you have to be in the moment because describing it doesn't do it justice.
Watching it also does not do it justice.
Well, in Office Space, it does. It's funny because I only remembered the rap music from the iconic taking the baseball bat to the printer scene, but I didn't realize it was through the whole movie.
Whole movie, yeah.
And it was pretty funny.
The opening scene was hilarious.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
When he stops singing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Turns the volume down.
But also,
the door.
Orlando Jones. At the end, he was hysterical.
Well, towards the end.
Yeah. As, hi, my name is Steve, and I used to be addicted to crack cocaine. Now I like to sell you magazines.
Well, and Lawrence's mullet should have had its own casting.
Oh.
Should have had his own credits, man.
Did you, there's a piece of trivia. He saw his character very specifically in his mind as someone that would enjoy the Allman Brothers. Which is pretty great.
Yeah, I hit the mark there.
Yeah. So compared to Idiocracy, I think this is a not quite as brilliant a movie, but much more subtle.
This is funnier than Idiocracy, but it's also not as heavy. It's not as much of a commentary as much as it is just satire. Idiocracy was commentary and satire.
Yeah, Idiocracy was just a brilliant kernel that bloomed into a delicate flower. I don't know. It's a kernel stone.
That gets kicked in the balls a lot.
Yeah. But no, I liked Office Space. I thought it was fun. Like I said, if I liked the main character more, I think I would like the movie more. But I thought everybody, even the little characters, even like the office mates, the ones that didn't even get, you know, like top billing or whatever, were great.
Like Drew with the O face?
Yeah, Drew with the O face was over the top.
Lundberg sex scene.
Oh, that was, yeah, that was hilarious. Well, even, yeah, I can't remember, she wasn't a secretary, she was just an office mate, I think, who would show up super smiling, like, oh, like, who's got a case of the Mondays? Yeah, she was great. Everybody was selling this.
Yeah, and it really captured the mood of the late 90s, a sort of, the world might end in 2000, but so.
Exactly.
I mean, that really was a prevalent attitude, and it did a good job of sort of handling that and dealing with it and showing the absurdity of it.
Yeah. Well, and it was, you know, this is a very September 10th movie.
Yes.
So in a good way. It is funny. I was like, you know, we actually, 1999 was a good year for us. For the most part.
Yeah.
Actually, all of the 90s were pretty good. I mean, not every year of the 90s, but, you know. Yeah, it seems like the halcyon days of youth. It was the halcyon days of youth. Yeah, remember when George H.W. Bush was taking the drug halcyon and people thought it was making him a little wacky and maybe that was going to trigger an Article 25 issue?
Hmm.
Yeah. No, you don't. You know why? This is just some crazy minor bullshit compared to the life we're living now. Anyway. So, Brother Jay, Office Space?
Yeah. This is an A movie.
Excellent. Yeah, I would agree. Brother Drew, is it worth it? Was it worth it? Is it worth it?
It's all of that is worth it. Yeah, no, it's great. It's my favorite thing about it is it's really easy to watch. It's not work. I mean, even like Idiocracy, I think, is more work to get through. This is really light. It's funny. It's fast-paced. If you don't like one gag they're doing, there's going to be another one around the corner that will work. Yeah, even the bobs. The bobs are hilarious.
Yeah, and the gags are short. And they're really mellow. None of them are offensive.
The gags are all what Saturday Night Live should be, but isn't. They should be a minute and a half to 2 minutes and move on.
Well, okay, like Something About Mary, for instance. Something About Mary is a movie that has this kind of thing, except every, 7 minutes, they throw in a scene where all of a sudden you zip up and you get the Franks and the Beans. Or you have the hair issue or something that you get way over the top. This doesn't have the way over the top moments, which I think is good.
Yeah, because the people watching don't need to be stimulated by stupidity.
Well, I mean, I like Something About Mary. It's fine. But yeah, this isn't quite this. Again, this is a subtle movie from the guy who gave us Beavis and Butthead. But so much more. I mean,
you think it's a subtle movie? I don't think it's all that subtle.
Well, maybe subtle is the wrong word. It's just a mellow movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like Drew said, it's easy to watch.
Because Milton's not subtle. He tells you he's going to burn the building down.
Yeah.
Oh, but he mumbles. that is subtle.
But the eldest member of this podcast mumbles.
Sometimes. But usually not creepy stuff about, you know, I really prefer, you know, I kept the swing line because it doesn't bind up as much as the Boston, and I have some of the swing line staples and everything, and I told you. Yeah, I love that sort of stuff. But even at the end, I mean, like, I like the, you know, sort of the punch at the end where at least they didn't reward Peter. For a second, even watching this time, for a second, I thought that Peter was going to put his shovel down in the dirt and come up with the traveler's checks. But it's good. They didn't give him that.
Milton has them, right?
Yeah, Milton took them to Mexico, and is now threatening to put strychnine in the guacamole because he got salt in his margarita. I could call the tourist board. take my traveler's checks to a different hotel. Yeah, no, it's great. Yeah. So I don't know. This is a fun movie. I agree with you
guys. Yeah, so if you're listening and you haven't seen it, you need to see this movie.
Yeah, it's fun. Or you know what?
It'll
come around. You don't have to go rush out to get it. It'll come to you. Or maybe not. I don't know. Okay, are we on to housekeeping? Concert talk.
Howard Jones was awesome. The opening act, not so much.
Who was the opening act?
Couldn't even tell you. That's how I don't even remember.
Indulge me by telling me just the name of one Howard Jones song I would know?
No One Is to Blame.
Okay. Can you sing a little bit of it?
I could, but I will not. I could play it from my phone if you'd like to hear a snippet.
No, it's okay. No, because I can insert it in here.
I am not.
Is to blame.
You need way more synthesizer.
Oh, that's just rude.
You can look at the menu, but you just can't eat. You can feel the cushions, but you can't have a seat. You can dip your foot in the pool, but you can't have a swim. You can feel the punishment, but you can't commit the sin. And you want her, and she wants you. We want everyone. To blame, yeah.
So,
does he play the synth?
No, he plays a keyboard. Electronic keyboard, but it's
okay.
A keyboard.
I'm sorry. Are you quibbling or do... He's a Korg man from way back. He's got a Clavinova or a
he's in his 60s. He took the stage and played for probably 3 hours straight.
Holy moly.
Him and his keyboard. That's it.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. So that's why I give him.
Did he tell little stories in between the songs and stuff?
He did.
Awesome.
And he said some of the songs he's singing are a little difficult because he doesn't have a band or backup singers or other instruments, and they weren't necessarily built as piano songs. But, you know, with a little modification and some effort, you know, you like it. And he did all the songs you would have expected. A couple songs that that are new that he's got, like in a movie that came out, and a couple things like that. And he gave us some stories, and he gave the audience options. At one point he said, here's, you know, I'm going to give you a choice of three songs. Which song do you want me to, because they're all covers. So which cover do you want me to sing? And the first one was a Brian Wilson song, which none of us voted for. Then it was the Beatles' Blackbird. And then in the third choice was George Michael, Careless Whisper. Which was just hauntingly good. it was good and bad to be in a crowd of my peers, because it made me feel fucking old. Because I was in the crowd looking around and thinking, this is not the concert I would have gone to 20 years ago, because the same theater I've been in concerts for 20 years now. And it was difficult to come to that realization. Jesse got a little offended because, of course, there was a guy standing in front of us that was like, there's nobody in this theater under 40. And Jesse's like, I'm under 40. So there was a little bit of that. But we had good seats. We were like the fifth row. And they were, you know, it was free for all seating. So we managed to get good seats. But the opening act was two women. I think they were both lesbians. One played a fiddle and the other played a piano keyboard. And it was just, it was not great. I think it was just, I don't know. I can't quite, it was just really repetitious and kind of tedious after a while. I give them credit because it's hard to be an opening act, but,
what style of music were they playing? I mean, was there a chicken in the bread pan picking
lesbian
out?
Lesbian pop. I don't know. And it was a lot of like suicidal love songs.
Oh, excellent.
So I don't know any other way to describe it. But it's an odd juxtaposition of, you know, keyboard vocals and a fiddle player. So I just couldn't wrap my brain around it. And I was completely sober the whole time, which probably didn't help. So,
well, hold on. A guitar and a fiddle. If you just add a...
there's no guitar.
I'm sorry. What was it? A keyboard?
Keyboard.
Oh, okay.
Keyboard.
I was going to say. If you add a guitar... and a fiddle, and then another sassy guitarist lady, you got the Dixie Chicks.
Well, and she played a guitar at one point, but then there was no keyboard. And then she was going to play one of the songs, but then she said, I'm going to play this song, and she talked it all up, and then she said, well, I can't play it because I don't remember it, so we'll move on.
Wow, that's tough.
Yeah,
maybe so they're just starting that. Out.
But, you know, Howard Jones gave lots of stories. That was really nice. He did the songs I would have expected, which was great.
What's your favorite Howard Jones song? I'm dropping it in now, so. Take my breath away. Hey.
Now, I want to say hide and seek, but I'm not sure if that's the right song. So one moment and I can tell
Why
you.
Why don't we hide and seek?
No. Oops. Yeah, hide and seek is probably my favorite Howard Jones song.
Howard Jones, hide and seek.
Time when there was nothing at all, nothing at all. Just an instant, huh? Was a being and he lived on his own. He had no one to talk to and nothing to do. He drew up the plans, learned to work with his hands. Work was done, and his words were these: I hope you find it in everything that you see. Hope you find it in everything that you see. Hope you find.
Which is also the title of an awesome Imogen Heap song, Hide and Seek, which is also probably nearly as good, but different song entirely.
Where are we? What the hell is going on? Does only just begun to fall. Crop circles in the carpet, sinking feeling. Spin me round again and rub my eyes. This can't be happening when busy streets a mess with people would stop to hold their heads heavy. Trains and sewing machines.
You should drop that one in too, because it's
also
awesome.
Similar to a Henry Rollins song, Search and Destroy. Or maybe that's just a Henry Rollins tattoo.
At least you can go with drive-by shooting, so.
Yeah.
Even in the middle of a whirlwind tour of Leeds, England, we managed to catch up to Henrietta and the band and drag them into the studio for a session. PCP One is proud to introduce Henrietta Collins and the wife-beating child haters. Hello, Henrietta.
Hi, Paul. Hi, gang. Hit it, fellas. We'll leave nothing to your imagination this time. We tried that last time, and in our opinion, it didn't work. We're gonna do a little number for you right now. It's called Drive-By Shooting. It's pretty wild. I hope you like it. We're gonna get in our car. We're gonna go. It might be your sister or it might be you.
Drive-by shooting.
Sipping on the night train.
First gear.
Cruising down the interstate.
Second gear.
Smoking on the angel dust.
Third gear.
I think my head's about to bust.
Fourth gear.
Drive-by shooting.
Watch out for that thing.
I love that song by Henry Rollins, by the way.
Oh, yeah. It's awesome.
But no, the concert was a success. I'm really glad that I got to go. I'm glad I got to see him. He's still doing really good. He looks good. He's could belt it out. Obviously, he did that, you know, that aging performer trick where they move the register down a little bit to sing. But that's, you would expect that. And you know, he sat on stage and played the whole time. So that's, I give him credit. That's hard to do. I couldn't have done that. I would have died.
Sweet.
So, next on the concert list, They Might Be Giants.
Oh, excellent. Now, I thought they were doing mostly kids' songs these days, or have they?
No, they I mean, they put out a couple kids' albums, mm-hmm. but they've kind of meander back and forth.
Cool.
Because they had a double CD out a couple, I guess it's probably been 6 or 7 years, but so they're still kicking. So it'll be interesting to see the crowd that shows up at this, because I suspect it's going to be a mix of people with their little children and then people my age and then people probably about 10 years older.
And Mormons.
Mormons?
Yeah. I think They Might Be Giants was a hit with Mormons. I could be wrong.
Okay.
That's true.
Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on our new voicemail account to leave voice messages, or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts, dial it already.